again, I'm Jereen Mortensen. Thanks for being here, and we're going to talk a little bit about play today. As you may know, my son has been building schools in Pakistan and Afghanistan, and Amira, his daughter, is 16 now, but when she was 10, she said, "Dad, there is something really wrong with all your schools." Well, he was, you know, really proud of the schools, and best buildings in the village, and, well, what was wrong? You don't have any playthings. And he got to thinking about it, and they put in swings and slides in one of the schools. And the kids there have to do chores before they go to school in the morning, and they were getting up at 5:30. Doing their chores, having their cup of tea, a chapati if they were lucky, and they'd run to school to play on these swings and slides. Well, after they had it from one school, they decided this is a good thing. We're going to have it in all of our schools. And so they now have swings and slides. In one of the schools in Afghanistan, one of the days, some men came, some elders, and some people that a little younger looked like Taliban. They were all armed. They had their Uzis, their AK-47s, and they said, "We want to see the school." I can only imagine how frightened the headmaster was. And then they laid their guns down. Come on, it is not moving.
Or you have that phone before. It's probably sleepy. You have to wake it up.
Anyway, people do carry weapons, but to come in and say we want to see your schools, and that this is, was during the time when so many of the schools were being blown up, destroyed, teachers were being killed. And after more than a half an hour, the headmaster said, "Well, don't you want to see the school?" And they said, "We've seen enough. We want a girls' school with the playground in our village." Now, Central Asia Institute that my son has had hoped maybe in 10 years they could start building schools in the Pashtun area. This is the area that the Taliban are coming from. And these men were from Mullah Omar, the head of the Afghan Taliban. They were from his ancestral village, and they wanted a girls' school in their village. That school has been built, and believe me, it has a playground. A year ago in March, Mullah Omar issued a decree that no more schools should be blown up, nor should any more girls be prevented from going to school. Now, I don't know if this had anything to do with it, but I like to think it did. And my solution for peace in Afghanistan is a playground in every compound. At the time I sent this picture and sent an email to my cousin, or several cousins, and one of them wrote back that was very interesting. He said he had just read a research study out of England on serial killers, and the one thing they all had in common is they never had fun as children. Oh. So even before that, when I was a principal, I was always a big advocate of recess. I think kids need it. But when I heard that, I saw this isn't just something we should be doing, it's vital. Now, if you will bear with me, I'm going to This is from CNN, a program, it's 3 years old. It was Generation Islam.
This is Change Islam, a program that major restrictions on airstrikes, and Muhammad believes that, along with the push to build schools and rebuild damaged towns, can turn the war around.
You've been quoted that we're not winning Afghanistan. Do you still believe that?
Yes.
Can you win?
Yes. I said, we are not winning there, but we can. And I really believe that we can win there.
America, Afghanistan, the Arab world, either all of us rise together or all of us fall together.
White House advisor Eva Patel says that in this fight, poverty may be an even greater obstacle than the Taliban.
I think we have to recognize that many of these young Muslims around the world are facing the absolute harshest situations imaginable. To wake up hungry and to not know where your next meal is coming from, we have to help do something about that.
Back on the streets of Kabul, one boy's story is a stark reminder. 13-year-old Anwar is darting through downtown traffic. He's waving incense over the drivers to smoke out the evil eye.
This brush is for polishing, this one for coloring, this one for red shoe polish, this one for black, and this one to get the dust off.
With his father too ill to work, Anwar is the sole support for his family. He never has any time for fun, but he's about to get some today. A program that lets children be just children and gives them a break from their bleak lives. It is the brainchild of a young Australian named Oliver Perkovich.
All of the kids that are on the street virtually have no time for any sort of recreation whatsoever because they're working hard time from a really early age.
Have you skated before?
No.
You never skateboarded before. You're picking up very fast. So get right. They're looking for a new identity. They don't particularly see the same things the way their parents do. They're not as biased towards foreigners or towards foreign influences. They want new opportunities for themselves, and the way to reach them is through recreation, is through sport, is through music, things that we all have in common.
Anwar is clearly a quick study. Imagine what he might have accomplished at school had he not had to drop out to help feed his family.
From the bottom of my heart, I'd like to go back to school. Is there anything better? I want a skill, and I want to learn to read.
That dream has become real for the young boy we met at the beginning of our journey.
Well, that's someone who has recognized how important play is. And I want to show one other. It shows the national sport of both Pakistan and Afghanistan. Pakistan has never won an Olympic gold medal, and I think one of the reasons is cricket has never been an Olympic game. But let's have a look at this one. And sorry about the weight here. Thank you. DVDs I wanted to share with you on play. I'm going to change the whole format a little bit. Play is how children make sense of the world around them.
Would you like more light?
Yeah, I've put on some light now. Can you remember something, not a game, but can you remember something you played as a child?
I didn't go seek. Oh, you said not a game.
Not a game. Oh. My cousin and I played school all the time. She had a sister 2 years younger. She was our student. She had two teachers, and she was a student, but she could read long before she went to school. She did very, because, and we played cowboys and Indians a lot, too.
We played house. We had curtains. And we had all kinds of pieces of material, and they became all kinds of costumes, and we had weddings, and we had funerals, and we had just making dinners and that. And my brother was the only boy, and we were always fighting over who was getting him for the groom.
That, any other games?
I used to build cities in my backyard with dirt piles and blocks, and I made roads, and had matchbox cars and hotels and hospitals and streams, put water in rivers.
We used to play a lot in the snow. We lived out in the country and they would pile these snow banks up way over an adult's head. And we would tunnel them out and play in them. And from the top of them, we could climb the lowest branches of the trees easily. So we played a lot in the snow in the winter.
Well,
I missed the question. I'm sorry, I was late.
If you could think of something you played as a child, not a game, but something you just played.
Well, we sold a lot of lemonade, and what you said reminded me is that we drew a giant road on our driveway, and lines down the middle, and we would just circle around a lot. We made forts in our backyard, played a lot of house.
I have two examples from school of play, of children working out something in the real world and play. Both of them, there was a girl just hollering and screaming. One was inside the playhouse, and I was observing the student teacher, and the student teacher went over to the playhouse. And when she opened the door, I could see this little girl was talking in the phone, and she said to the student teacher, "That's all right, I'm just talking to my ex." What was she working out?
The divorce.
Yeah.
That. And the other one, I was in an elementary school, and they did a major musical every year, and this year they had done Annie. And first grade, outside recess, and this one girl just shouting at the other kids, and I thought I better go over and see what that was about. And she said, "Oh, that's all right, we're just playing orphanage." But doing something. At the time when my husband died, I was thinking, I never played widow. I don't have any sense of how this feels. I played teacher, I played mom, a lot of those things, but I had never played that. And that is disappearing for our kids. This just playing. I've been hearing a lot of it here in Holden. Children getting together and they're you're the mom or you're the hiker or things like that. And those things are so important. I was at a Bible camp and they had this kind of little outdoor chapel. And they also have a daycare there. And I said, why don't you play a church? So during the morning when the kids were there, they said, let's play church. And pretty soon someone had them all sitting in rows, and someone was leading singing, and then there was liturgy going on. But there they could play something and make sense of that. It is, go ahead.
I was going to say that our grandkids have a puppet stage that my daughter got at a garage sale or something, and it's about this wide and this tall, and they often play different scenes, events that have happened, and they got the puppets, and they do this whole little production, and you sit down and watch the whole thing. So they're working out something that happened in school or something like that. Yeah, it's a good way.
When I was a principal in River Falls, Wisconsin, they went to all-day kindergarten. And when that happened, the kindergarten teachers didn't have enough prep time. So they had to add a half an hour of someone else being in each day for prep. And the school board was discussing, well, should they have a half an hour of math, or should they add some reading things? And I did a lot of research. I was well prepared. I went to the school board and actually hired someone to do creative play. And so she went around to all the kindergartens, but every week they got a half an hour with her of creative play. First thing she did was school. And then she had props so they could play Three Bears, and props so they could play Three Little Pigs. They did Pizza Parlor once, but all those kinds of things are so important. And it's disappearing from our schools. I know a lot of schools that are cutting out recess so they can have more reading. And who plays the least are rich kids and poor kids. Why would that be?
Rich kids have too many lessons and places to go. Mm-hmm. Poor kids have no money, no work. I don't know about the poor kids.
Have any of you here ever played workup?
No.
Softball? Workup?
Yeah.
Would you explain it?
When there's an out, then everyone shifts in a sequence. Like first baseman goes to second, and second baseman goes to third. And I don't remember when the pitcher fits in, but that way everybody gets to a bat and also play in the field.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes, at least for when I did it, there'd be three kids. Sometimes there'd be 12 kids, and you didn't have size. You just went around, and there was no coach, no little league field, but all of us got to be pretty good softball players because we played every position.
My grandson's, youngest grandson's soccer team does, it was only, let's see, he's in sixth grade now, and I don't even know if they have a certain role now, but all this time they've been doing it, they play all positions. So
and a lot of them do. I was in Paris with a friend, and we were in, it wasn't a back alley, it was a street, and there were all kinds of cars there, and the kids were kicking the soccer ball in between all the cars. And we were remarking, we don't see that in the U.S. When the kids play soccer, it's on a soccer field, they have a coach. What are the advantages of doing it with a coach?
Learn things that they might not get to if they were just doing it as a game.
What are the the advantages of not having a coach?
More spontaneous.
And kind of mediate the play themselves. They can.
And what do kids do when they're mediating the play themselves?
They solve their own problems.
Are there a lot of arguments?
Loud.
Sure.
And just think of the benefit of someone, I'm going to take my ball and go home. What do you have to do?
Compromise done.
You have to. Well, I thought David was going to do some things on improvising. But as I was thinking of this, I was thinking, someone asked me, well, what about adults playing? And some of you were in the exercise last night on a really rather serious thing on where should committed people live? In a well-to-do suburb, in a poor community, in a mixed community. And Judy, tell them what happened.
Okay. We divided the class, which was about 16 people, into three groups, and each one was to be the advocate for their neighborhood. So
and
they
pretty
were,
serious stuff.
Yeah, and they were to tell the reasons why this new couple coming from out of state should move to their neighborhood. So they were a cheerleader. And they also could tell the disadvantages of moving to the other neighborhood. It was the loudest discussion that I think we've ever had. And there was good humor, but there was a lot of really good reasons, and people really got into it. And they were really pretty strong advocates for their own
neighborhood. And Judy got up, and she wasn't listing things. She was role-playing.
Yeah, Judy Akers.
And
yeah, at first I got worried. Guess what? She was talking to me personally instead
but
then, of talking
and
to my
when
role.
She started role-playing, this group said, oh gosh, Joyce is next. She's a professional storyteller. But if adults were playing. Now, if you go someplace and you're assigned to role-play, sometimes that isn't fun. Sometimes it isn't playing because it's your assignment. But if it just happens, as it did last night,
yeah, sure did.
And then for those of you who weren't there, the person from the rich suburb, when he said he wanted to talk to the music director about the hymns that were being sung, that sort of took down the house on that thing. What's your favorite game?
We have so many. Our son,
one,
is a game.
One. What's your favorite game? And you don't have to say it's the one, but something that's right up there.
Any game that I can play with my grandkids, which is generally a somewhat mindless card game, but I just enjoy seeing the look on their faces as they win or lose. So.
And
so,
do you have one?
I like basketball and I like Monopoly.
Do you play Monopoly strictly according to the rules?
No.
I remember as a kid, during Christmas vacation, we always played that with cousins, and if someone would go broke, someone would lend them money, and the game went on for days and days. So basketball and Monopoly, that's kind of interesting, two very different things.
We like to play Pinochle when we go back east to play with our families. And when we play with my side of the family, there's always these rules that the family has made up. So the game has always changed. And my husband says that, yeah, you just learn the rules then, they change the rules the next time. But it really is, it is a lot of fun. But anybody coming from the outside would not recognize it as Pinochle.
I like Monopoly Deal. It's like Monopoly, but it's a card game. That's probably my favorite, like, board game, card game. And my favorite field game is called called Capture the Chicken, which is like Capture the Flag, but with rubber chickens, and there's a division in the field, and there's two hoops on each side where there's chickens, and you try to get all four chickens to your side. If you get tagged, you squat down, but then even if you get tagged, someone from your side can untag you and bring you back. And I like it because it's not an elimination game, so it's fun for the kids who might not be the most athletic, and it's silly because you're running after a chicken. So.
Yeah. Have you noticed that Anna really likes playing games? And what does that do for the kids you're playing with? When you're really enjoying it yourself.
Well, I really do enjoy playing. I mean, it's my job, but I also am in the job because I like it. I think it gives them permission to enjoy it too. If they see an adult really loving something, it gives them permission to let loose a little more. And I always try to look the silliest so they can feel the permission to look silly too.
Mm-hmm.
That's
good. Favorite game?
We play a lot of Locus. Locus, it depends who you're playing with because there's arguments about how you pronounce it too. Phonetically, I say it's Locus. But there's a lot of versions of it, and you have to manipulate figures to fill in the space that's allotted, and you can only go places that are connected. And so in our family, we basically play for second place because our grown son, who lives with us, always wins, but he's very nice about it, so it's okay, we play for second place.
What about you? Favorite game?
I can't remember the name of this particular one. It's a board game. And we have a map of the United States with maybe 20, 30 cities on it. And we start out with the track. We're going to build a railroad that will connect the five tokens that have the names of the city on it that you get secretly. You get five cities around the country. And you hold that, you lay your track down, people can see the track, but they don't know what cities that you're trying to connect. And the first one to get all their cities connected wins. And you can use someone else. If someone else has laid track where you need track, you use that track. It counts as a connection, as a connector.
A game I don't particularly like, but my cousins, two grandchildren, who are 6 and 7, love the zoo. They've got Amish furniture, so you put the two couches together and you have a cage. They get in the cage. I am the school teacher. And I come in with this class of children and I tell them, don't knock on the bars of the cage because it will upset the animals and they'll get so frightened. Well, of course someone does, and then I have to scold them. And then my cousin, who's the zookeeper, comes in and tells us we cannot come back to the zoo anymore. So we leave, but then we come in with an apology and we play it over and over. But I don't know quite what they're getting from it, but it's something they
control.
Really
control. It's not.
and they are some kind of lemur, and they get so frightened, and they get underneath and hide, and that. Another game they like to play is, they call it Little House on the Prairie. But they will go to the compost pile, not the pile, the compost in the house. And then I'll pick something out of there and wash it off and eat it. One day it was tops of strawberries that had been cut off. And there was actually coffee grounds in there, but they were doing that. And they were so poor that they had to eat. Well, what are they working out? I'm not really sure. I'm not really sure what they're doing in zoo. We need to play with them. Or what they're doing in this little house in the prairie. I don't remember the family Little House in the Prairie ever needing to eat out of compost. But
yeah, we didn't play poor a lot when we were younger.
Did you?
Like, we were either poor and needed to find a way to, like, get the resources we need, or we were like really rich and princesses, but we were put in this like situation where we still had to, like we were on a desert island or something. We'd put a piece of cloth on the, on our blue carpet, and we'd be on a raft, floating around. Need to figure out how to survive.
Oh yeah, it was real dangerous.
And what were you probably working out that you?
I think we were trying to figure out, you know, how people live their lives when they're adults or older, and how you go about getting food and
really did you always survive?
Yeah. There weren't any games where we died, I don't think.
So, that. What about your engineering? What were you working out?
I just loved building things and pretending I was in a big city. I grew up in a small town, and I always wanted to live in a big city. And just sort of the hustle bustle.
Were you assuring yourself you could do it?
Maybe. Because I do live in a big city now.
And do you get along pretty well?
Yes.
What's your profession?
I'm in city planning, public policy, so there you go.
Good choice. First education.
That's a great one.
Isn't that interesting? Yeah.
Well, I'm neither a cowboy nor an Indian, but I was a teacher. That, I guess I just want to say, oh, and Anna, you have to assign one of these and fold it against itself so it doesn't stick to anything.
Okay. Put my name on it?
Yeah. We're going to have a drawing. It's so important that children play, and I'll go back to the serial killers. Now, there were other things that happened to other people, but that was the one commonality. They never had fun as children, and there are millions of children in the world, some because of poverty, some because of riches, and play is disappearing more and more from this country. So I want you to play. I want you to advocate. If David was here, we were going to do some improv, but I think we'll have our drawing.
You know, I think, I don't know if it was you or somebody else we were talking about it. Our Dick here is a little over, about 33 years old now at church, and we spent a long time choosing a name for our daycare because there were all kinds of names, and we wanted one that was very, very meaningful. It was in our era that time where there were a lot of schools that the daycares were really basically to start you on your education right away, and they were very strict and very formal. So we chose the name Play and Learn, and it's still there because we felt like our first emphasis was going to be play, and we wanted to teach the parents that that play was a form of learning. And it nothing to be afraid of. Their kid was still going to make it. They'd still do fine in school because they were learning in a different way, through play. We still have that philosophy. We still do it, although the government gets in the way once in a while, so that's what we have to do. But other than that, they're playing away.
And if you need a bit of information or something, talking to preschool or daycare or maybe to kindergarten in your school, tell them in Finland they don't start reading until after their seventh birthday. And Finland is supposedly the top school system in the world, with one of the most difficult languages in the world to learn. So,
what is this drawing?
It's a drawing.
Oh, I drew myself. That's not
fair. Somebody leave?
No. Yeah, yeah. So we.
One more.
You have to be present to win.
Joyce.
Well,
but I think drawing herself should not negate her.
Oh, she's back in there. Someone else can draw her.
Okay.
My cousin that I talk about quite a bit is an amateur artist, and she made a set of note cards on games we used to play. Okay, we'll let you draw.
Anna. Hey. Pays to be honest, right?
Good cover.
So one of your friends painted these?
My cousin did.
Your cousin did.
Mm-hmm.
Judy R. Hmm.
And you don't get a whole set. You have your choice of Starlight Moonlight, Workup, or Anti-Over.
I'll take Anti-Over. Thank you. These are beautiful.
These are really fun.
Cute.
You want Workup. You know what Workup is.
Oh,
and then you get Starlight Moonlight.
Awesome.
And she has the directions on
that. That's
the back.
So great.
Yeah,
oh,
when
you.
I said I was going to do one talking about play, she said, oh, let me send these note cards.
And everyone
else
a winner.
Everyone's a winner.
That's right. We were a winner just by coming.
You
Anti-Over, Red Rover, then.
No, Anti-Over is you throw the ball over the brooder house if you have live on a farm or over some small building.
My brother and I created Holes to China. We dug so many holes in our backyard.
I did the same thing.
And my dad always said, I never worry about burglars around here. They break their neck before they could get anywhere near the house.
And as we talked about it, just the things that we did. And as I said again, when my husband died, I thought, I never played widow. I don't know how to do this. It was not part of my
because we played funeral.
Oh, and we used to take trips, you know, pile the wagon up with things and pull it into the next block, and we were going all the way to Chicago or New York or someplace. And
you know, you ask about the wealthy, and when I think about it, how many houses in many, many, many neighborhoods would ever allow a child to dig up the entire backyard? I mean, it just isn't done. It's got to be landscaped. It's got to be beautiful. And a lot of the games we played were not destructive, but they definitely didn't beautify the you know, landscape of our backyard and stuff like that.
Why was the finding that children that come from poverty experience less play?
I'm not talking in this country particularly, but
okay.
It's in the places where they have to work.
Oh, sure. Okay.
But in this country, in a lot of neighborhoods, the kids are never allowed to go outside.
Right.
So what they're doing a lot of the time is watching television.
Or it's very structured play. They're being driven to soccer practice or music lessons or this camp. Or I had this discussion recently with some friends. It's like when we were kids, we got home from school, we just got together with our friends and ran around the neighborhood, and we don't do that now as a society, and we're sort of trying to figure out why is that? Because is it media sensationalism? There's the child abductor, and if you look at violent crime rates, they're like the lowest in history right now.
I have.
And so is it the media that's influencing us? I mean, like, my daughter has been biking to school by herself about a half mile since she was 7, and some parents say, that's awesome, and other parents are like, how do you dare do that? So why is that? I think the one thing that has changed is, at least in cities, there's a lot more traffic.
Mm-hmm. No sidewalks.
You know, there's two income households, people driving to work, people rushing here and there, people texting when they're driving or talking on the cell phone. And so people are worried about kids running out in the street and getting hit.
And as you say, no sidewalks, that's happening a lot.
Yeah.
A lot of places.
Yeah, the kids in our block play. All kinds of ball games in the street, but they're very good. They have a watcher, but because again, you know, we just live in the old Rhythm,
right.
And
or
they play out the street.
Being a city planner and, you know, talking about suburban, what you're talking about yesterday, a lot of suburban development really isn't designed. designed to encourage walking. It's, you've got the cul-de-sac and you have to get in the car, mm-hmm. get out of the cul-de-sac, get on the super busy street. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, in a lot of the older cities, you have this great grid, so it's easy to take shortcuts and you can avoid the busy streets.
And we're going to give him the task of always considering play right up there before even getting to work easy.
Well, there's an interesting index now. I think it's nationwide. It's the walkability index. And you can put in neighborhoods and cities.
Yeah.
And there's a walkability score. Like, how easily can you walk to the playground and to your neighborhood
mm-hmm.
business district
mm-hmm.
and to your drugstore and to the school?
Now, League of Women Voters has been using that. They've been using it to check all of, well, particularly in the Columbus area, to check all of the neighborhoods and encourage changes.
I think there are some neighborhoods where there isn't any place for the kids to play. You know, they don't have a place to play basketball, which is one of the cheapest games to play, because all you need is a ball and a hoop. You don't need all the equipment for football. And so there isn't a place where they can get three or four kids together to play. And so they've got to have some place to go. And the same way with swimming. There aren't public pools in a lot of places. And so those kids don't have a chance to play in the water, get comfortable, and learn how to swim.
Just swimming is such an important life skill.
Yeah. And when we first moved to Buffalo, oh gosh, years and years ago, the man across the street from us taught swimming, physical ed, in the city schools. And he said, black kids can't swim. He said, there's something about their makeup that they can't swim. And I said, well, do you think it might be because they've never had a pool to be in before?
Something about their makeup.
He
oh, gosh.
Never considered that. There were no pools in the neighborhood.
Some of it is liability. Our grandkids are allowed to play in the school playground that's right down the street from their house. But a lot of schools have fences because they don't want to be liable if somebody is hurt in there. Or even on the playgrounds, both at school and in the parks. And we have a lot of parks in Worthington, but the playgrounds have to be, you know, you can't have swings because you might get hit in the head. You can only have swings if you have the soft ones. So they took out all the hard ones, and monkey bars are out now, no more monkey bars and all this sort of thing. And it all goes back to liability.
It's gone to the, I've actually done some research on playgrounds, and it's gone to the other extreme where kids, playgrounds are so accident safe now. Kids don't learn how to take risks, and
mm-hmm.
the pioneers of this are the Germans. There's a lot of great German playground equipment that's not even allowed in the U.S.
Mm-hmm. I heard a child psychiatrist speak once, and he said, every child has the right to a broken arm. And
a scraped knee or
do you know in the UN Charter of Human Rights under child, you know, every child has the right to food and shelter, and they have a right to not be abused, and a right to education, and they have a right to play and recreation.
Is that really? Wow.
It's right in the UN Charter. So important business. Well, it's almost by. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Go play. if there's discussion in your community about more reading early, say play is more important, and you keep enjoying playing and playing with the kids, because it's a real joy to see you with them.
Joy of the World Board Gamers Association.
All I have to do is watch A Race to Nowhere. Have you familiar with that documentary, A Race to Nowhere? It's all about how in our country, at least like upper middle class and upper class, there's just this push to take more and more advanced classes and forget about play and recess. But it's like, to what end are we pressuring our kids to do this? And a lot of kids are stressed out.
Yeah.
It's all about achieve, get into the best schools. And, a lot of kids just aren't enjoying life.
Mm-hmm. And they should be having fun.
I remember listening to a couple of kids at school trying to set up playtime. I mean, they were like fourth or fifth grade. Well, I've got my violin lesson, and I'm like, oh, gee, how about so-and-so? No, I've got my swimming lesson. Well, how about so-and-so? No, I've got my... And this went back and forth, and finally they decided they just couldn't make it that week. Or probably ever.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you for our guests.
And just think of that Australian young man that took that little bit of space in Kibble and made a skater stand.
Yeah. Skater stand. I was just looking at all those skateboards and thinking, gee, there's a lot of skateboards that kids in the United States have abandoned because of not being cool enough. Yeah, bring them. Skateboards are fine, but their skateboard isn't cool enough.
Oh,
thank you all for being here.